6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, it is time for TMZ.
Hey, it's time.
It's time.
It's time for TMG.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. I enjoy discovering and sharing real-life moments of inspiration from everyday people. And this show is about finding moments of inspiration for our everyday lives. And look, and if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an all-new episode of TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. Hey, guys, real quick, do me a favor. Don't forget to visit, subscribe, share, and like our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And as always, I want to give a huge shout-out to my biggest supporter, my biggest fan, my lovely wife, Nicole. Hey, girl, how you doing? I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Man, today's episode is absolutely amazing. I could not wait for Thursday to get here to share this episode with you. And I'm so glad that each and every one of you are here. And whether you are joining from right here in the United States or maybe in Canada, or maybe you're joining from the UK or Portugal or Spain or South Africa or Trinidad and Tobago, wherever you are around the world, and let me take this time to tell you thank you. I'm so glad you're here. And whether this is your first time, or better yet, if this is your first time tuning in, watching the show, do me a favor. Go ahead and type in the word new in the chat, N-E-W. And if you're not watching this, go ahead and just say it out loud. We'll catch it. We'll pick it up in the airwaves. New. Thank you. For everyone said, well, Travis, listen, man, I'm not new. I've been watching the show ever since you've been streaming. Let me take this time to tell you I appreciate you so much for joining into the show. This week's episode, guys, is going to be absolutely amazing. I'm so glad that you tuned in. Guys, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and a little later on, I'm going to provide some information about that. But if you've been watching this show long enough, you know that this show is all about finding moments of inspiration in our everyday lives. So if you have an inspiring story that you'd like to tell, and maybe come on a show, drop me an email at tellmesomething21@gmail.com. That's tellmesomething21@gmail.com. And you say, Travis, listen, I know someone that would be a fantastic guest on your show and that your audience would love to hear from them, but I don't want to come on a show. I'm a little camera shy. That's okay. You can still send us their email with their information at tellmesomething21@gmail.com. And guess what? You can even remain anonymous if you like. So there you go. Guys, I want to go ahead and play this information by our affiliate sponsors. Get that out the way. When we do, we're going to come back. We're going to dive into this week's episode. I know you can't wait. either. Don't go nowhere, guys. We'll be right back.
It's a proud associate sponsor of TMG Tell Me Something Good podcast. Please use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomethinggood, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link. Fanatics is the place to go for all of your officially licensed sports gear from your favorite sports and sports teams. Use the special link bit.ly/tellmesomething21 and pay a visit to our sponsor today. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
Breaking your phone sucks. Breaking your phone, then trying to sell it online, sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online, only to find out that the money you'll only get for it sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online for peanuts, shipping it, and finding out that you got scammed sucks. Gizmogo makes selling your phone fast, safe, and simple by paying you the highest price for your device. And with Gizmogo's free unlimited shipping and price guarantee, millions of people are starting to sell on Gizmogo. Fast, safe, simple. Gizmogo, the best way to sell tech.
There it is right there, guys. Please visit one of our affiliate sponsors. Guys, the information is right there below. Look down. There it is. It's right there in the chat. He said, well, Travis, I'm not watching this. That's okay. Listen up for it later on that you'll hear it, guys. I mentioned that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I just want to share some information with everyone about this. Mental health awareness is not just something that you would find just here in the United States. It is globally. As a matter of fact, we'll provide some global information about mental health awareness and just share this information with you guys. Globally, an estimated 970 million people are impacted by mental health disorders. This is daily. Representing about 1 in 8 people, chances are you are engaging and encountering someone that may have a mental health disorder. And you may not understand what's going on with them, but 1 in 8 people, this includes a significant increase in anxiety and depressive disorders, with initial estimates showing a 26 and 28% increase, respectively. Now, during COVID-19 pandemic, these numbers went that high. Additionally, mental health conditions are a leading cause of disability worldwide, affecting a substantial portion of the global population. If you know someone who is in need of some mental health help, and there is a 24-hour mental health hotline that they can call, 855-416-5373. Again, the number is 855-416-5373. Or maybe you are dealing with a mental health crisis and you want a way out. And maybe you want to be safe for those around you. 855-416-5373. Look up. That number will be broadcasted throughout the show the entire day. Now, I know you say, well, Travis, what are we talking about today? How does that play in to what we're talking about today? Guys, if you did not catch today's episode, it is called Me, 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 Recognizing Narcissism. Yeah. Me, Me, Me. Now, I remember when I was a kid, there were times where I wanted all of the attention all focused on me. Yeah. And if you are a parent, let me just put up a video here real quick of this kid throwing a tantrum, just having a tantrum, kicking their feet, wanting everything their way at that time, at that moment. If you are a parent, you may have had to deal with your child or a child
wanting to have things go their way so badly that they would throw their hands in the air and almost throw a fit. Like you see this kid here just kicking their feet, and they want things to go their way at that moment. And they would lift their hands and they would say, me, me, me. And whether it was a cry because they did not get enough attention, or maybe their behavior was because they had too much attention, either way, they wanted everything to go their way all of the time. And when we're dealing with someone with narcissism, it's like a mental tantrum. Everything must be about them. Narcissism isn't just about self-love. It's a toxic mindset that harms both the individual and everyone around them. Guys, listen, in this eye-catching episode, we will explore what narcissism is beyond the social media hype about it, beyond the last post you read about it, how narcissistic behavior destroys mental well-being for both the narcissist and the victims, a real-life story from someone who survived a narcissistic relationship, and healing strategies to protect yourself and recover. Whether you are dealing with a narcissistic parent, partner, boss, or friend, this is the right episode for you. Guys, our very special guest joins us from all the way across the Atlantic in the UK. Guys, do me a favor. He is an author, a coach, and holds a PhD in neuroscience. Give a huge TMG welcome, guys, for Dr. Stuart Wood. Stuart, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks so much for that introduction.
Stuart, I'm glad you're here, man, in more ways than one.
Yeah, so am I.
Man, Stuart, man, I'm so happy that you're joining us from all the way in the UK. Where are you at in the UK, Stuart?
I live in a town called Loughborough, which is probably about 60,000 people, but it's right in the middle of the UK. It's an area called the Midlands, strangely enough. So we're about 125 miles north of London and about 90 miles from one coast. And then we're about 90 miles from Wales and about 300 miles from Scotland. So we're kind of, if you draw a pin in the middle of England, that's us.
Okay, so you can make a day trip to London and make it back home.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I live about 5 minutes from the railway station, and the trains run at least once or twice an hour, and it takes about between an hour and a half and 2 hours. So actually, it's very quick.
Absolutely. Well, Stuart, I'm glad you're here with us today to talk about this very important topic that we hear about a lot. You see a lot of posts on social media about it a lot. There's a lot of buzzwords about it. And I mentioned earlier, Stuart, and I put this video up, a little kid throwing a tantrum. I say narcissism is kind of like having a mental tantrum taking place. Now, we've heard a little bit about you, Stuart, and about what you do. If you don't mind, please kind of fill in the gaps for us a little bit and let us know what it is that you do, Stuart.
Right. Well, let me fill in the gap. After I finished my PhD, I went into the pharmaceutical industry for about 20 years. Okay. And my role within that was to design and to run clinical trials. So I had kind of oversight of clinical trials. My job really was to liaise with the people who were doing the work. So for me personally, it was a really good job because I've always been interested in people and also the impact of, if you like, what science actually does for the people who are on the receiving end. So it was the ideal job for me. I did that for about 20 years and also did a bit of medical education where I was helping people understand about different conditions or different ways of treating conditions. And then in 2007, the company that I worked for decided that they no longer needed me. Well, they no longer needed anybody in the medical department. So the whole medical division was sold off. And at that point, I went on my own,
mm-hmm.
and was a bit, I wanted to do something that involved my love of people, my knowledge and my area of interest.
Right, right.
But also something, again, that had an impact on those that I was dealing with, something that I could kind of get some feedback from as I was doing it. So after a couple of years of working out exactly what I wanted to do, then I started a business which basically helps people to confront fears. And this all came out of, we've got weird and wonderful pets at home, as you may have heard. One of the things that I noticed was when I took these animals into my children's class at school, there was an amazing response, particularly from people who found it hard to engage with what was going on, who found it hard to be part of a lesson, found it hard to focus. As soon as you take a snake into a classroom or a spider, you get the children's attention, as you can probably
immediately
imagine.
Yeah. I would guess so, Stuart. Yes, that's an attention getter right off the bat, Stuart. Yeah, you don't get to bring, and I've seen pictures of your snake and spider, Stuart. You don't get to bring a snake and a spider into a kid's classroom and think they're going to keep adding and subtracting, Stuart. No. At that point, Stuart, all the attention is on that animal that you brought in the room.
Exactly, yeah. And the beauty of that is that because these animals create a really intense reaction in people, you either love them or you hate them. There's not a lot in between.
Yeah.
What I was finding was that these children who were finding it hard to engage with their lesson actually would just be totally fixated on the animal and would really relate to it and be able to work with it. So even if they were scared, they were prepared to have a go and sort of stroke it or hold it and get over that fear. So that expanded into a business that I've basically been running since 2007.
Oh, wow.
Which is all about helping people encounter fears, face them, kind of realize they've got them, and then challenge them. Because one of the great things that they've discovered in the more recent, I guess, research last 20 or 30 years is that our brain continually develops. So they used to think you get to like 21, 22, and after that you were a no-hoper. You know, that was what you were going to be like.
You're stuck with that. Exactly.
But now they realize that if you challenge the brain and challenge the way it thinks, the brain actually does rearrange how it thinks and takes on board the new information to react in a new way. So a lot of what I've been doing is just helping people realize that because they're afraid of something, it doesn't necessarily make it bad. If they're afraid of something, it doesn't mean that they can't do it.
Right.
Because one of the reasons we have fear is it stops us from doing things for a reason. It's about protection.
Right. Self-preservation. That's right.
Exactly. And if you're going to get over that, you know, you've got to get over a massive resistance in yourself, because you're fighting with your brain to say, well, I'm going to have a go. And your brain's going, no,
don't do it. Your brain's going to say, don't do it.
No. But then what people realize is, although it's uncomfortable, it takes a lot of effort, once they've done it,
mm-hmm.
They don't all become the world's greatest snake and spider fans, but what they realize is that they can do a lot more than they think.
Mm.
And so if we're prepared to have a go and challenge our fears, very often we are able to just enjoy life a lot more, because we discover we can do a lot more than we thought possible. So That's kind of what I've been doing. And on the back of that, as we'll get onto it later, I've obviously encountered narcissism, and that's another story that kind of fits into my background of being interested in people, understanding the impacts of fear and trying to help people understand what's happening and kind of get over it. Because I'm an educator, I'm not a therapist. Right. So I'm not a psychotherapist. If people came to me for counseling, it's not a good idea. I mean, I'd probably give them lots of great ideas, but they'd probably go away with more troubles than they came with. So my role, very much one thing I know that I can do, is to present often things that are often quite difficult to understand, but actually in a way that people understand and can relate to it. So then they can take action. That might be getting help, or it might be just
taking action
for themselves.
Well, you know, help comes in many forms. The way, you know, it isn't always when you go to one person for help. You know, I've learned no one has all the answers. So when we go to someone for help or for assistance, or we're looking for help or assistance, we should never place that expectation on that person. They're going to solve all our problems. They're going to help us. Exactly. You know, they can't. That's why they have different doctors. That's why you have a dentist. That's why you have a podiatrist. Because you don't go to a podiatrist because you get a toothache. Hmm. Right? You know, no one person is going to have all the answers. But you said something, Stuart, I want to get into. You said that if we can face our fears, then we'll realize that we can do more than we thought. It doesn't make me an expert in that field. I don't all of a sudden become this great snake handler. I don't become all of a sudden, you know, this great person who can jump off the cliff. But if I can face my fear, then I can accomplish more than I thought. So what that tells me, Stuart, is this. There's a greater potential in us, in each of us, in all of us. What tells me is what caps that, what keeps the lid on that, Stuart, are the things that we're afraid of. It's our conscious. Our conscious will always keep us in the same, reliving the same moment. Let me say that again to somebody who just tuned in. Your conscience will always continue, keep you living, reliving the same moment over and over again. It could have happened to you when you were 8 years old, 15 years old, 10 years old. And you're going to see that that statement plays a part when we're talking about recognizing narcissism, because your conscience will keep you reliving the same moment over and over again. And so, Stuart, you're helping people. You love helping people and engaging with people. And you when you lost a job in 2007, you took that and you applied it to your passion to help people. But were there some things happening with you in your life at this moment that made you want to choose this particular field? You say losing your job. Was that the kind of the linchpin that said, you know what, let me just pursue my passion? Was there other things going on? Was this the kind of catalyst for you?
Yeah, I was, when I worked in the pharmaceutical industry, I was involved with a lot of active research. So a lot of what I was doing was about finding out new information and discovering new things and helping doctors to discover new things.
Okay.
Had I continued in the kind of work that I was doing, the option that I had basically was going to a company that wasn't conducting research. It was basically trying to sell drugs to customers.
Gotcha.
And so my role would have changed from something that itself was evolving as it went along because of what was happening, simply into someone who was likely to be asked to communicate with people who weren't I knew that the people they were targeting were a group of people that we had actively avoided because they didn't have the expertise or the authority within arena to treat it. So I would have just gone into being a glorified salesman. And that really, you know, if you think the counseling skills are bad, sales and marketing, I think they celebrate every day that I'm nowhere near them.
Well, you know what? I learned, Stuart, each of us have a backstory, and each of us have a backstory that drives us. wherever you are right now, there is a story that's driving your life. There is a key narrative that is driving your life. Whatever you're doing right now, whatever you're accomplishing, there is a narrative that's driving that story. And if you like comic books or action movies or superhero movies, one thing I like about a superhero movie is that every superhero has a backstory. They have that story that's driving them to be who they are. And regardless of what superhero that's coming to your mind right now, your superhero has a backstory. And where you are right now, it has a backstory. You didn't just begin being what you were. There's a story that's driving your life. And we're talking today about me, recognizing narcissism. There is a story that's driving you right now. And that story, if you're dealing with someone who is narcissistic, boss, lover, spouse, family member, whoever it is, you know, somebody who's always trying to gaslight you, and that's a narrative that's driving your feelings, that's driving your emotions. Stuart, you mentioned earlier about your animals that you use, and those animals, they bring about a huge response because it's driving a narrative behind it. And the way we feel when that person, that narcissistic individual, when we come around them, is a story. It's driving us. It's driving who we are. Me. We live, Stuart, in a world, in an age of everything is all about us. Yeah, we do. I know. We don't want to admit it. I know. We don't want to admit it. We live in the age of me. Look. If you don't believe me, look at this. Look at all the selfies we take with our phones. Our phones and technology help us to live in the era of me. We do. Selfies, personal brands, and the main character energy. And what I mean by that, Stuart, is this. What I mean is this. If the story isn't about them, then that story is not worth hearing. Come on. I know there are people watching. You're thinking about someone right now that if the story is not about them, then they don't want to hear anything else. They tune you out. Hey, Stuart, have you ever gone to someone and you say, hey, man, let me tell you something. I want to tell you something that's going on with me, right? And you begin to tell them what's going on with you, and somehow they flip it about them.
All the time.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be talking to you about me. How did we end up on you?
Yeah. Yes, I've had one or two spectacular stories, one or two spectacular incidents where that happened. So, and I think in one of them, I was actually really ill in hospital. I had a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And the guy came in to visit and have a chat. And he said, you know, how are you? And I said, well, I'm feeling okay, better than I thought. But, you know, there's no telling with these things, you know, because the heart's a bit unpredictable. And he says, you're right, you know, because with my heart, and then the next 5 or 10 minutes was all about his story.
Out of him.
But I think he developed circular breathing through his backside because I never saw him take a breath. And it was just like a continuous assault of this is me, this is my problem. And I eventually, I mean, I was a really short fuse. You know, I had no ability to concentrate or focus. It was about 2 days after I'd had that.
Well, you just had a heart attack, Stuart, so...
I had no mental capacity to focus, and partway through, I just had to put my hand up and go, "Whoa, can we stop, please? I can't. I'm going to have to go to sleep, or you're going to have to go home,
or you're going to have to leave. You have to go home, but you got to get out of here. You got to leave here." And that's what we talk about, the main character energy. You can come tell somebody, Stuart, a good accomplishment that you made. And you're like, man, I just got promoted on my job, and they will begin to tell you 30 minutes of all the compliments they made. And you're like, really? Hey, Stuart, I'm like this. You got one chance to do that with me. If I come share something good with you, and now you give me 30 minutes of what you've done and what you've accomplished, I will never share another accomplishment with you. Yeah. I will not. You got one shot with me, Stuart. One shot. And I used to be that way. Someone would tell me something, Stuart, and I would be that guy that visited you in the hospital. I would be that guy that would take your story and relate it to something I said or something I experienced, and I would spend the next 20 minutes telling you about me. And I would leave feeling like I had done some huge accomplishment. I would leave feeling like I helped you. Like I did, yeah, I did that. I made Stuart feel good. No, you made Stuart feel like garbage. And that's what happens when we encounter someone with these narcissistic behaviors and they feel like they've accomplished something. They feel like they've done this huge humanitarian thing. They feel like they've done, and sometimes they might not even care whether they've done something huge or humanitarian or not, but it becomes about them. It's like this video, Stuart. I put this video up again of this kid having this tantrum. It doesn't matter where it happens. It doesn't matter where it occurs. It happens where it happens. It happens at the moment it happens. And a narcissist, Stuart, they're not just taking our time. They're stealing a moment. They're stealing that moment from us. But my thing, we say narcissist is not self-love. You know, it's not, I just love, it's a self-love movement. The self-love. It's not self-love. It's, but where does that line kind of go from self-confidence to narcissism? It's okay to be self-confident. But when my self-confidence, Stuart, when it crosses the line to your self-confidence, now that's narcissism. I've crossed the line. Let's begin with what exactly is narcissism, Stuart. We've been talking about it. What exactly is narcissism, Stuart? Let's separate the fact from the fiction and from social media buzzwords and social media hype. What is narcissism?
Okay, so if you think of what I would call a car, you would probably call it an automobile. But okay. Anyway, as long as we're on the same page, it's got four wheels and doors, and we sit in and drive it. Okay, if you think of it, that complete entity, the whole car, it's made up of different parts, all of which are important. If I came to you with a wheel and said, "Do you like my car?" You would say, "That's not a car, that's a wheel." Okay. And so the car is made up of different bits, which when they fit together, create the finished item. Well, narcissism is very similar. Narcissism is made up of what we call traits or behaviors, which is the way we react to specific things. And the important thing is it's not someone having a bad day. We all have bad days. Right. We all have days when we would rather not be there. Someone comes up to us, says something, we're rude, etc. And there's nothing wrong, you know, that's human. The thing is that we have a thing called empathy, which is that ability to understand or at least appreciate how others feel. And so if you were to point out to me, "Well, Stuart, you were quite rude," my response would be, "Oh, really? I'm sorry." And I'd want to discuss it with you so that we could resolve the problem. The issue with narcissists is that they have no empathy. They lack empathy almost to total exclusion. And what that means is that they have no ability to think beyond themselves. Their simple worldview is everybody and everything in the world is there to serve me. And so that's the starting point for them. So if they're rude to you, for example, or they say something really quite horrible or cutting or undermining, they will never reflect on whether you were bothered about it or whether it hurt you or upset you. It's simply they are entitled enough. I have a right to tell you truth as it really is. The problem with that is that if you try and point out to the narcissist that they've done something wrong, then you are opening yourselves up to the gates of hell, basically.
Yeah, you don't know what's coming out their bag next door.
Not at all. No, I mean, and the thing is, narcissists are at the core. They are. It has nothing to do with self-love.
Exactly.
Narcissists hate everybody, including themselves.
That's the paradox. That's the paradox about it, Stuart. They project what they feel about themselves around the, not just that one person, but on the environment, every arena they walk into.
They do. But if you think of narcissists come in all shapes and sizes.
Right.
They also come in different traits that dominate. Mm. So you have the classic narcissist who is the larger than life, bombastic, walks in, loud, proud, dominates the room, charming, charismatic, you name it, and they will sort of take over the whole space.
Right.
And people fall for them because they know what to say and they know how to charm people. But there's also a group of narcissists that are the opposite end, where they're not, you don't notice them in a room. They're the ones who sit quietly in the corner. Excuse me a second. They're the ones that actually sit.
See, the problem with that, Stuart, is you're too popular. See, if you weren't so popular, Stuart, they wouldn't be calling you. That's what it is. Stuart does a lot.
I've unplugged the phone cable so it won't ring again. So the narcissist actually, the big bluff narcissist presents
right
this image of being confident and being
sure.
They're the best at everything and they're never wrong. But inside, they're cripplingly insecure.
Absolutely.
And so what narcissists do as a whole is to depend on external things to make themselves feel good or feel worthy. And so you'll find typical priorities for narcissists are top job, top rank, top pay,
top influence,
status, money, possessions, image, not a hair out of place,
totally
obsessed with themselves, that sort of thing. And that's not because they love themselves. That is simply a mask or a facade that they put
on. Absolutely.
Because it deflects people away from how they really feel inside. And actually, the strange thing is that it deflects the narcissist away from how they feel about themselves
as well.
So they believe the hype about themselves.
Oh, man. That's it.
So inside, they're withering away. But they create this mask that they must live up to, because whilst they're in that sphere, they're safe. But if you question them or ask them something or even dare to make out that they are simply human beings, what happens is that then challenges their thinking, challenges their image.
Yep.
It breaks through that mask and it forces them to look at what's really inside. And they can't handle that. So I always describe a narcissist as basically, one of your seven-year-old children in an adult body.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely.
So emotionally, they are children. Physically, they're people. And so what will happen is when they kick off, it's, big time trouble. And anybody who's been in a relationship with narcissists will know that there are a large number of people every year who commit suicide or are killed by narcissists because of this rage, this uncontrollable temper. Not all are the same, but narcissists have this rage, which is basically 0 to 1 like that. And they then just can't control their, they have no regulation over their emotions, and they will obliterate the person opposite, either verbally or physically.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But then there's this other group of narcissists I mentioned who are very quiet and withdrawn. So you don't notice them in a crowd. They sort of, they almost get noticed because they appear to be shy.
Correct.
Or to be, you know, withdrawn. And these are the people who are, you know, they're basically the same internal structure. So they're still totally insecure.
Right.
But there are also people who are simmering with anger, simmering with rage. They feel totally entitled to do what they want, as any narcissist
exactly.
would.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they don't shout about it. So these are the people that are far more likely to recruit friends, family, positions of authority, characters in positions of power.
Align themselves with people who are influential, who can help get done what they want to get done.
Exactly right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, what I'll do, Travis, I'll just do a very, very brief read, because
sure.
narcissism actually does have a diagnosis. It has a clinical.
I know it does.
Diagnosis.
It absolutely does.
You're familiar with. But the whole thing with narcissism is that it's not this one-off bad day. It's a continuous, ongoing approach that they kind of attitudes that they display to everybody.
Correct. Yeah. Don't think when you encounter someone with narcissistic behavior, don't think that you're being singled out. No, this is everybody. You're not that you may be taking it personally, like they're singling you out. No, I have news for you. Everybody catches the smoke. Everybody catches that smoke. Whoever they encounter, and let me share this, they catch it first because they realize that they know within themselves that, well, something's wrong. And they know they're not really this way. The confidence that they show and display with everybody else, they know that's not how they really feel inside. So everything they do is to mask and keep from anyone ever seeing who they really are, because they don't want to see who they really are. And at times, Stuart, if you have, let me just say this for everybody. I'm going to let you do your reading, Stuart. If you have a difficult time seeing who you really are, if you have a difficult time accepting who you really are, you can't expect someone to accept you when you don't accept you. You can't accept others to accept the real you when you keep hiding who you really are. And go ahead, Stuart. I just had to throw that in there when you made it in there, when you mentioned that. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah, no, that's true. And actually, that what you've just described is their main defense mechanism.
Yeah.
It's the main way, because they will keep people. What happens is if people, you know, the people who they attract and who are attracted to them are very often those who have big hearts and want to help.
Yep.
Which is perfect for the narcissist, because it means they get everything they want and more.
Yeah, with no resistance.
No reply.
Yeah, no question, no nothing.
So they just, you know, they will use that, they're very scheming. They're very much aware of what they're doing.
Know exactly what they're doing. Everything's calculated. Everything's pre-planned. And what they'll do, Stuart, and I'm speaking partly, guy, from some of the things I told you, I had some traits of this, Stuart. What you would do is you would mention something that you are already planning on doing, and you would mention it early so that when it occurs, Stuart, when it occurs, then you can always tell them, oh, remember I mentioned that to you?
Yeah.
Manipulation. Come on. Oh, come on. I know there's some people watching. You don't want to be honest with yourself. Listen, you will mention something, Stuart. You'll mention it so that later on, when it happens, when it occurs, and when it all falls apart, or when you got your plan together, you can say, well, you know, I mentioned that to you last week. And the person goes, well, I don't remember. Yeah, I was sitting right here. I had on a blue shirt and a red pair of pants, and I had my baseball cap on. and I talk to you about it and blah, blah, blah. But it's calculating. It's calculating manipulation. And I know there are people watching right now that there are people that calculate manipulation. And manipulation is part of narcissistic behavior. You got to manipulate somebody to do what you want. You got to manipulate somebody in a relationship. You got to manipulate people. It's a form of control. You got to manipulate, and Stuart, and you do that in an effort to manipulate the person's response, because you can never really control a person's response, but you know that your actions are going to elicit a response. So since you can't control it, you try to go ahead and get ahead with the narrative. You can try to control the narrative of their response. So instead of them getting angry with you, you say, well, don't get angry with me. Remember, I told you about it a week ago. Come on,
yeah, man. Indeed. Okay, so there is a positive, there is a formal diagnosis for what they call narcissistic personality disorder.
That's right.
And this positive diagnosis requires demonstration of at least five of the following traits in a way that causes significant interference with love or work over an extended period of time.
Wow.
So grandiosity and self-importance.
Mm-hmm.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Distant fantasies of success, power, attractiveness, intellectual superiority, or ideal love, a sense of being superior and special, a need to be admired, a strong sense of entitlement, an ability and basically no filter against manipulating and exploiting others. They lack empathy.
Yeah.
Believe that others are envious of them when actually they're envious of other people.
Absolutely.
And they demonstrate arrogant and contemptuous attitudes and behaviors. So if you are going to have a formal diagnosis, you need at least five of those nine characteristics to show up. But I always argue, you know, These people are not going to go, hey, I think I've got something wrong with you. Let's go to the doctor and find out. it's not going to happen. And so whether or not they have a formal diagnosis is largely irrelevant. The most important thing is the impact that their traits have on other people.
Exactly.
So if they actually... what's the best way of putting it? You know, if they're just quickly, Travis, remind me where I was going with this. My mind has disappeared off up the street.
If here's the thing, Stuart, what I learned, and with individuals with narcissistic personality disorder or NPD, they will never admit that they have this flaw, because admitting you have a flaw means you're not perfect, which means all your whole narrative that you built about yourself has fallen down. Everything exactly. A narcissist does to prop up what they feel about themselves. It does to prop up what they believe about themselves. And any narrative, listen, let me help y'all guys. Any narrative that challenges that internal belief, any narrative that challenges that internal narrative, they cannot accept that. They cannot have that. That's why individuals with narcissistic behavior, individuals who have NPD, any narrative that challenges that internal narrative that they've already created, they're already against it. They're already at odds about it. They're going to argue to the point they're going to be right no matter what. You can bring evidence and proof and show it to them, and they will not accept it because it's not the narrative that they have. So they're not going to go to a doctor. They're not going to go to a mental health professional and say, hey, look, I got 5 of these 9 characteristics of narcissism, and I need some help. Something is going to have to seriously go wrong where they are willing, because what happens, Stuart, is this. Whenever they go to a doctor, whenever you go to a doctor and say, I need some help, or something's wrong with me, whether it's weight loss, whether it's an addiction, whether it's a habit, what you're saying is, I'm out of control and I can't help it. Yeah, and you're saying, I'm out of control and I can't help it. You go to a dentist because you have a toothache and you try over-the-counter medicine. It's not working. You go to that doctor, that dentist, and say, hey, back here in the back, doc, what you're saying is it's out of control and I can't help it. And for a narcissist to admit it's out of control, I can't help it, that's not something they would say. That's not the image they want to project. That's not the narrative that they built their life around, Stuart. That's not the narrative that they want to push and they want people to believe and hear about them. So to your point, what you were indicating, Stuart, is that they're not going to admit to these 5 out of 9, 1 out of 9, 2.5 out of 9, 1/3 out of 9, because it's not the story. And part of that story can be culture-wise, because in my culture, we got to be strong. I can't show weakness in my culture because, you know, and I'm going to help you guys out. I can't let everybody know that I got something wrong with me. Could be part of culture. Stuart, that could kind of drive away. Let me ask, why do you think, Stuart, that it seems to be gaining so much ground, though? If we know it's not an endearing trait or an endearing thing, why does it seem to be gaining so much ground?
I think the problem is that it's attractive and we encourage it.
Exactly. That's it.
So if you have, for example, someone who is well known for doing nothing, they're
absolutely
a celebrity.
Nothing. Okay? Absolutely nothing.
The important thing has nothing to do with whether they've done anything. The important thing is that they are well known.
Right.
And people crave after this, partly because society has let them down. And parents have let children down by either just overindulging them, as you've said, with everything they want, or withholding from them the very thing they need, which is love and affirmation.
Oh, that's good.
So people have grown up with this, you know, total lack of either ability to see reality as it is.
Correct.
Or they've grown up with no ability to stand criticism, because as soon as you criticize them, as you say, it triggers everything off.
Everything.
Now, if you go to something like social media,
oh boy,
what does that do? Social media itself is neutral. And social media has, I would argue, social media has as many good points as it does bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The problem is that you are effectively giving a narcissist a megaphone. And so what they're doing, you're enabling them to create a self persona, to show a false self, to build people up to be envious of them, to show themselves as being, you know, benevolent,
than life. Yeah, bigger than everything.
Community orientated, and I'd right. love to save the world and the elephants, you know. But actually, what it's all it's doing is it's enabling them to put up a false self that others then looking on think, I should be like that. Why isn't that happening to me?
Yeah.
And exactly. then that plays out to every insecurity that we grow up with, very often around appearance or, you know, women and appearance, that whole area, it saddens me so much because people become obsessed with the superficial.
That's superficial stuff. Yeah.
Classic narcissism is superficiality, no depth. It's simply what we see, you know, the thin surface veneer.
Correct.
And I think with the environment that people are in, older people as well as the people who are growing up, especially the younger people with access to everything on a device.
Correct.
What happens is people are almost lulled into this need to build their identity on what other people think of them, which is narcissism. Wow. Basically, narcissism is all about taking on board other people's opinions of you so you can feel good about yourself.
Absolutely.
If those opinions are bad, well, the people are wrong, obviously.
Then they're wrong, and there's something wrong with them.
They don't understand me.
They
don't realize how great you are. So, you know, if you've got people who are deeply insecure or just superficially insecure, they don't have to have deep insecurities. If you're online 17 hours a day, which some of these kids are,
right,
and you focus on sites which show other people showcasing their talent, the wealth, the beauty, everything else, basically people get sucked into that, and that's right. part of the attraction of narcissism, because it's superficially, it's actually convincing, and it's charming, and it's charismatic, and it draws you in. It says, join me. The trouble is, when you get in there and join it, it's even more empty than it was outside, because suddenly your inner self isn't enough. You rely totally on what other people say, on what people see. And so when that goes down, if someone's negative to you, you've got nothing in you to counter that. And you've got no resilience. And so you then go with the flow, which means that these people, these kids are very often, you know, in spikes and troughs throughout a single day.
Right.
And that just plays havoc with the mental health, and it plays havoc with all the things that help us to connect as human beings, which is like, you know, clear communication, strong relationships, and deep trust. Narcissism and narcissistic traits attack every one of those three pillars and totally undermine a strong relationship. So effectively, what we're doing is we're allowing, particularly of these platforms, you know, they have such selective censoring.
Right.
That is, it's like if the head honcho thinks, you know, it shouldn't be censored. If it doesn't upset me, then that's fine. Do it. But if you say something totally benign that he gets offended, then you're swept off. You're blocked and you're cancelled and all that crap. So I think narcissism is increasing because the background noise that we've got is increasing. And
exactly.
when you've got, it's like anything with, you know, if you want a really honest and open opinion on life, ask people of my generation. You know, we are the moaning generation.
We will definitely tell you.
We will tell you what's not right. But one of the things that the most common complaints is how standards have dropped. Actually, what happens is that what's accepted changes. And what is acceptable changes. And so if you live in a society where, I don't know, shooting someone is totally unacceptable, then when that happens, it shocks you. If your background noise, for example, your surroundings, that happens every day.
I like that.
That's no longer something that's a problem. It's just an accepted part of life, your role is to avoid or be part of what's going on, because that's just the background noise. So if you've got a society where you've got a lot of narcissism in the background, or as in your own case, in the States at the moment, you have very prominent people who are demonstrating extreme narcissism.
Right.
It becomes normal, and when it becomes normalized, people accept it, and so then they ramp up to the next level. It's this whole thing of
the next.
They used to call it permissiveness, but it's that kind of what wasn't acceptable is now acceptable, and therefore, if you oppose it, you're a square.
You're an enemy. I tell people this: what happens, Stuart, is you stop becoming narcissists. See each individual in two phases, in two ways. Either you're an ally or you're an adversary. You're either ally or an adversary, and you're only an ally if you are following along with the same narrative that they've created. It's like a child throwing that mental tantrum. You will only be an ally to that child as long as you keep responding to that tantrum in the way they want you to respond. As long as you continue to respond to a narcissist in the way they want you to respond, feeding their narrative, you will always be an ally. You mentioned something earlier, Stuart, that you say, the time we spend on social media, lack of engagement with individuals, real life commitment relationships with people, building real connections with people. Those guys, those are some practical ways in which you can help guide and steer yourself through these things. Those are some practical ways that you can do that. And there are some factors that play into it. You mentioned the time we spend disconnected from people. I don't need anybody else. Remember, I told you we began this with me, me, me. This is the age of me, me, me. I'm going to be the main character of every story. I'm going to be the superhero of every story. I'm going to come out smelling like roses on every story. My mentor, man, I kid you not, I'm sorry. My mentor said something one day. My mentor, I attended church here in Birmingham. Stuart, my mentor is Apostle Stephen A. Davis, Refresh Family Church. And I heard him say this. He said, I call him my coach because he's like a football coach. He said, if you aren't willing to get your hands dirty first, you'll never be able to see the flowers grow. Most people want to see the flowers grow. They don't want to get down in the dirt and see the dirt on their hands, because you have to dig in the dirt and get the rocks out, get the weeds out, get all the other bad stuff out. We have to first come with our dirty hands and admit, man, there are some things I need to work on. There are some things that I need to do. And if we aren't willing to do that, then we'll always standing on the sideline looking at somebody else's garden grow, because ours will go to waste. Because we aren't willing to do the dirty work that it takes. We aren't willing to admit that, man, there's some things so the practical things, that everyday things that we can do to help, in fact, the roles that play in this, one of the roles, things that play a factor in this, Stuart, is we mentioned earlier, not admitting it. And then avoiding it. Avoidance. I'm just going to avoid it. I'm just not going to say anything. No. Things need to happen. There are also, my question brings this to Stuart. It makes me think, are there potentially, cultural tendencies? We mentioned earlier, in my culture, we don't, the men have to look good. We have to be strong. Can minds, and we mentioned earlier, narcissism is a mindset. Can these things, certain mindsets be passed down and kind of to perpetuate this?
What I've found more recently that was mind blowing, really. Was that in the West, our enemy, if you like, is individualism. And so we see narcissism as focusing on the me and focusing on the individual. If you go to a lot of Eastern cultures, India, a lot of those cultures are actually, interestingly, although it's the collective good that they would argue for, a lot of those cultures are actually more narcissistic than Western cultures.
Wow.
The pressures are very different. So over here, the pressure is very often one-on-one or a peer group on an individual.
Right.
In those sorts of cultures, you have the basic understanding of the country, that or the culture. This is how it's done.
Right. This is what we do.
And if you then stand up to that or try and go against that norm, you will actually be under a massive amount of pressure. I read a really interesting story just this morning about a lady from Sardinia in the 1920s. And basically the culture was girls grew up, when they got to teenagers, they left school. And they went to look after the family and the house and the men. She was really fascinated by the whole idea of writing.
Oh, wow.
And so she invested a lot of her time in writing. And she was continually attacked and put down and told off and had things destroyed and prevented from following that through. But she did it in secret anyway. And she eventually had one of her bits of writing published.
Mm-hmm.
And although the family were in some ways proud because it had brought glory to the family.
Right.
She was a woman. And therefore that went against everything culturally at that moment in time. And so there was this conflict where she'd achieved something, but it was kind of stifled because of what the cultural expectation was, which girls are not educated. They just look at
right, men. Right.
And the interesting thing with her story is that she wasn't put off by these, by external pressures. And she actually went on to, I think she was the first woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Congratulations.
For her writings and her insight on this. But I think for me, it was an amazing picture of, very often, because of where we sit, we see narcissism in a particular way. Narcissism's destructive, and it is about me. But equally, that's kind of expressed differently. If you have a whole culture that expresses me,
come on,
then anybody who goes against that is then stirring up trouble. It happens throughout the world continuously. A lot of cultures will influence their members based on where they're born, based on, academic ability, you name it. They can influence how successful that person is because they want to intrude into their life and have power over them, which essentially is what narcissism is all about. It's having power over people rather than having power with people.
Mm. Oh, that was good, Stuart. Did y'all catch that? Power over people instead of having power with people. That's good. That's
the root of narcissism. You see, if you have a group of people who work together and actually communicate and share ideas, there's a good chance there's going to be a lot of people within that who are not going to get their own way.
Right.
But the ultimate end result is something bigger than just what would have been possible with, one person's ideas or one person's ability to say, oh, this is the way I want it to happen. And the problem with narcissisms is this binary one-naught lover-hater. You see that all the time on social media, you don't agree with me, so you're a hater.
I
don't agree with you because I don't agree with you. Your decision's different to mine. Doesn't mean I hate you. And so people are actually losing that resilience and ability to be disagreed with in all the background narcissistic noise that's going on. And so it's actually increasing polarization and conflict. Whereas what we need to do is kind of reverse that and get people talking again, get people interacting, get people debating, getting people to disagree, but being able to disagree and be friends.
And be friends at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you're not a hater. At the end of the day, I can still text you. At the end of the day, we can still go to lunch. At the end of the day, we can still have dinner. And you don't go somewhere in the room, shut yourself off, or you don't call me for 6 months or something like that. That's because it loses that ability to disagree. Still, let me ask you something, man. We talked earlier about narcissistic personality disorder. It's a real thing. People don't realize it's a real thing. And it occurs more in men than in women, but it does occur. It is an actual real mental health challenge, an actual real mental health crisis that occurs. Let me ask you a question. When you think about things that are a disorder, like last month we talked about autism and being on the spectrum. People who are narcissistic and have narcissistic personality disorder is a spectrum. It's a spectrum for those individuals as well. So it fluctuates. Like you were saying, some may be very grand and boisterous, and some may be very quiet. They're on the spectrum. So you may not have autism, but you may be on you're on a spectrum with somewhere else. You may not be violet, but you're blue. You may not be green, but you're purple. You may not be but you're on a spectrum. And some days you're better than other days. You're on a spectrum. One day you can handle them, next day you can't, because it's a spectrum. You don't know what color gonna show up that day. Yesterday there was yellow, and today they green. You don't know what you're gonna get because it's a spectrum. And anything like that, it can have other factors that can play a part in it, like childhood trauma. Yeah. Insecurities. We kept mentioning insecurities earlier. Or even this, and parents can do this, excessive praising your child as they grow up. Give him that false sense of that there is absolutely nothing wrong with you. Everybody that you encounter that don't like you, there's something wrong with them, and that is really not good. Excessive praising your child. So grandparents, parents, aunts, uncles, cousins, let them be able to face the reality. I didn't say browbeat your child or tell them they're nothing, they'll never be anything, but help when they make a mistake, talk them through that mistake. Don't help them avoid from feeling that mistake, because then they can learn from it. I'm not saying put the child down and tell them they'll never achieve any great things in life, but having them go through a sense of inflated belief about themselves, in which they don't feel, well, if you don't like me, then something's wrong with you because my auntie liked me. Well, you got a little attitude. I don't like you either. you could have stayed at home too. But the paradox, man, that we talked about, keep talking about, Stuart, is this, that while people who are narcissistic have narcissistic traits, the paradox is they come across confident, but they are terrified of criticism. They do things like self-sabotage jobs, relationships, careers, and even their own happiness. What are some of the impacts that you have experienced or witnessed those who exhibit narcissistic behavior and narcissistic traits?
Are you talking about the impact on the narcissist themselves, or are you talking about the impact on the people that they...
On both.
Okay. I think one of the most common responses that you get when someone has been abused by a narcissist is a massive feeling of injustice.
Right.
You get an intense grief response. And the lady who I helped through her separation and divorce from a long-term narcissistic marriage. Mm-hmm. When she was younger, she actually lost, she had an 18-month daughter who was run over in a playground and died. And she described the grief and trauma of trying to get away from her narcissist and what she'd experienced under the narcissist as being greater than what she experienced when she lost the child.
That's deep, Stuart. That's heavy, man.
So putting that in context, people think of narcissism as being a bit of a, you know, an inconvenience, or someone's a bit narcissistic if they disagree with you.
Right.
It's a lot bigger than that. And exactly. The other interesting thing, if you look at the psychological profile of a lot of the, you know, the mass shooters, mm-hmm. the guys in schools, Sandy Hook, etc.
Right, right.
If you look at their psychological profile, it's identical pretty much to that of a covert narcissist.
Mm.
Now, that doesn't say that all covert narcissists are going to go out and commit mass atrocities. What it does say, though, is that narcissism is something a lot bigger than just an inconvenience.
Correct.
It can have a significant impact to the point of someone being prepared to go out and take the lives of, you know, a whole load of people who ostensibly were friends
to prove their
and
point.
Take their own life on top of it. So, yeah. You know, the worst case scenario impacts, I think, of narcissism are these extreme cases where you see people who cannot control the response that they have, the inner response, either rage or sadness or whatever it is, that they have to go out and almost exact revenge, you know, on those who've caused it. And actually the ones who suffer are not the cause at all. They're the actual victims.
They're the actual victims, Stuart. Stuart, question. So with that being said, and so they're willing to go out and do anything it takes to keep that narrative going, to keep that story going, to keep that me. I'm not getting enough attention. Me. I got too much attention. Me. If the attention is off them for too long, or then I got to start screaming. If I'm getting more attention, but I want more, I got to do something to get it more on me. Some of the practical ways, Stuart, that we can help heal ourselves from narcissism. You mentioned earlier, you said speak with someone who's a trusted friend, get some medical profession help. You know, the narcissist themselves can do it. The victims themselves can peer-to-peer counseling, find someone who can help. Now, I know this show will be shown there in the UK. You know, people are watching this show right now in the UK. So for the sake of all of our UK listeners, Stuart, let them know where can you be contacted. And let us know here in the States how we can follow you.
Okay. I guess the best way to find out what I'm doing or what I'm thinking, in other words, you know, what I'm writing about, is probably our Narcissistic Abuse Network. That's the one. Look at that. Wonderful. Even before I said it, it was there on screen. So I've no doubt you'll put a link up to that. But
that
basically is a lot of my work tends to be more behind the scenes than out in the spotlight. I want to get out, and I want to get out and be able to talk and to educate people who struggle with the whole area of toxicity. So things like workshops for businesses, etc., where toxicity can be a real problem.
Absolutely.
But also on that, there's a blog which simply has me putting down ideas or putting down things that I've discovered and that other people discovered in a way that people can relate to it and easily understand and begin to understand how the narcissist thinks, but more importantly, how we can react. Because, you know, as I've said, I'm not a counselor and I'm not a therapist. But I've seen them in action, and I know enough about what goes on to be able to say, for example, if you are looking to contact a therapist because of you've been in one of these narcissistic relationships, it's actually really important that you seek out a therapist that can help. And with narcissism or narcissistic relationships, you really do need what we call a trauma-informed or a trauma-aware counselor, because the impact of trauma and the outworking of trauma in people's lives requires a different approach to a standard overcoming, you know, maybe a habit or something. So the danger of going to someone who isn't trauma aware is that you will share your details with them, you'll share what's happened, that kind of thing. And they run the risk of saying, are you sure that's true? Now, one thing we haven't touched on is this term gaslighting. One of the narcissist's biggest weapons is gaslighting, which is basically they change the mental perception and psychological perception of their victim, and they manipulate it in such a way that the victim loses all sense of reality and where, and they lose their reference point. And so if you were in a relationship and you've seen, you know, your narcissistic partner break something, and you say, "Oh, I noticed that's broken. We better replace it." He'll say, "Well, I didn't break it." And what they do is, even though you've seen it with your own eyes, they will deny it to the point of, "It's not. If I don't say it's happened, it's not happened."
Yes, exactly.
And when you're on the receiving end of that for long enough, your brain psychologically is changed to the point that you no longer trust your own perceptions, you no longer trust your own ability. You actually lose sense of who you are. And ironically, you begin to rely more on the narcissist
on them
for your perception of what's truth. Well, you know, that's like asking, I don't know, it's like asking Satan for what the, you know,
what's the truth?
What's the truth? Yeah, you know, you'll get anything but the truth. But that's what happens, and that's how these people manipulate it. And so if a victim has been exposed to that and then goes to a therapist who inadvertently asks the same question, are you sure that's what you've been through?
Are you sure that's what you really,
It basically just re-traumatizes.
Exactly.
Re-traumatizes the victim. So if you are seeking help, please do check that it's trauma-informed. On the website, on our narcissistic abuse website, you did touch on a thing that says free resources. There's a whole load of links to therapists, both UK and US, who have shown, if you like, speciality or special awareness of how to deal with narcissism. You guys over there have one of the world leaders in narcissism, the wonderful Dr. Romani Devasula, who lives in LA, as she puts it. She lives in the epicenter of narcissism itself. But she has so many really, really good videos. You know, I can't recommend her highly enough, but there are links on the page which people can go to where they can find access to material in their own, you know, in their own country, or access to material, even how to find out about what goes on in their locality, who to approach, who to look for, voluntary organizations of people who've come out of emotional abuse or come out of narcissism. There are a lot of voluntary groups that have been set up in different towns and cities that people can go to and kind of share their experiences within a safe circle and deal with people who've been through what they've been through, who empathize with what they've been through, actually give them, you know, giving them help. So there's a whole range of stuff out there. The website is not about me. I do talks to help people become aware of what's happening, but the real you know, rubber hits the road with the therapists and the people who are doing the counselling. The website just points you to people, lawyers and counsellors, etc., who are aware of that.
Guys, I want to show you something real quick. Stuart has this book here, Escaping the Void. It's available on Amazon. How to Support Victims Emotionally Abusive Relationships. Escaping the Void. It is available on Amazon right there, guys. Escaping the Void by Stuart Wood. Stuart, we talked about something earlier. We briefly mentioned it, and I want you to touch on it real quick. Then I'm going to give you a couple of seconds to talk about your book. Stuart, we mentioned earlier that you do something really unique. You, these Burmese pythons and these spiders that you use. Real quick, Stuart, do you have one that we can see?
It's funny you should mention that.
Oh, gosh. I think I might regret this.
You will be so happy.
I am so happy that we're separated by the Atlantic Ocean. That's what I'm so happy about, Stuart. Yeah. I'm so happy that the Atlantic Ocean separates us, Stuart. Oh, my gosh. What is that, Stuart? Yeah, she doesn't want to come out. Oh, spider. There you go. Oh, God, it's a spider. Oh, I'm going to zoom in so everybody can see.
Oh, there we go. That's Rosie.
That's terrifying. Oh, my gosh.
And Rosie's going out with me this afternoon.
But Rosie can, yeah, I'm glad Rosie can't swim and still over there in the Atlantic. Man, real quick, Stuart, give us about 2 minutes of what your book's about.
My book is really a story of, excuse me, just put Rosie down. Yeah, the book is a story about me supporting a friend through identifying what the issue was, basically separating from a husband of 15 years who'd been abusive, actually going through the divorce process with her, the kinds of tricks and things that he got up to, and also giving ways that people can interact in those situations to cut out all the noise and chaos that the narcissist loves to create.
Wow.
And get straight to the heart of it, really. So it's a handbook. It's not just for people who are in, you know, one-to-one relationships. It's about, it helps you to understand narcissism,
right,
how they think, how they operate, but also, you know, when you're dealing with these people, they're incredibly high conflict. They love a fight. If they can have an argument with you, then they often feel better than if you don't.
Absolutely.
If you just have a normal discussion, because they feel better about themselves that they've managed to hold power over you.
Yeah, they made you do the reaction they wanted.
Exactly. So it's tackling things like that. It's about 300 pages long, so it's not a short read, but it's divided up and written in such a way that it avoids jargon as much as possible. And if I do use terminology like gaslighting or triangulation that people love to throw around, it actually describes fully what the term means and gives you an example so you can understand it within context.
Okay. All right, Stuart, real quick, before we get out of here, what is one thing you would like to say to encourage someone who feels trapped by either someone who is a narcissist or realizes that tonight's episode spoke to them, that it hit them and it hit home with them and they would like to get some help? What is one thing that you would say to encourage someone?
The most important thing is that you're not alone.
Mm.
There are millions, literally, of people who are impacted by these kinds of relationships. And there are Absolutely. Millions of people who have successfully left these relationships. It's a little bit like that. Be wise as serpents, but gentle as doves.
There you go.
So if you're going to talk to people, please just be very careful who you share with. especially when it comes to sharing with friends. You know, if you've got friends that are exclusively yours and have no relationship to your partner or the offender, those are a good option, because the biggest thing with this is that it will eventually get back. Biggest risk really is it gets back to the abuser, who then just doubles down on you and makes your life even more miserable. So be careful, you know, be wise, but also be hopeful, because millions have done it. You're not on your own, and there's plenty of help out there. Even when the days are darkest, you know, the light's just around the corner.
Oh, Stuart, that was a nugget right there. Yeah, even when it's darkest, the light is just around the corner. Guys, Stuart, don't go nowhere. I'm going to get us out of here real quick. Stuart, want to thank you for joining and being on the show. Man, all the way from the UK across the Atlantic, guys. I told you, this is a worldwide podcast. I told you that, guys. So hold on, Stuart, don't you go nowhere. Guys, we got to get ready to get out of here, but I want to go ahead and say this real quick when we talk about narcissism. I want you to keep this one truth in mind. I want you to keep this one thing in mind when you encounter this type of behavior, this type of trait. Keep this one thing in mind. The narcissist, their job is to always try to assign you what your worth is. Their job is to define what your worth is. If they didn't assign your worth, then that the choice is you don't have a worth unless they give it to you. Let me go ahead and set you free today. Let me just make this statement to you. Your worth is not defined by their approval. Yeah, they don't have to put a stamp on who you are. Your worth is not defined by their approval. Guys, we got to get out of here. But as always, guys, you can stream right here every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, to listen to the show. Or you can stream it on your favorite listening platform like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and so many more. Guys, I got to get out of here. But as always, in parting, if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. I'm out of here, y'all. I got to go. Peace.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribes. Your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.